There was a man of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, "The 1,100 pieces of silver that were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse, and also spoke it in my ear, behold, the silver is with me. I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be my son by the Lord." And he restored the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. And his mother said, "I dedicate the silver to the Lord from my hand for my son, to make a carved image and a metal image. Now therefore, I will restore it to you." So when he restored the money to his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave it to the silversmith, who made it into a carved image and a metal image. And it was in the house of Micah, and the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod, that's a priestly garment, and household gods, and he ordained one of his sons, who became his priest. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. May the Lord bless the reading of his word.
Did you notice anything off in that passage? What's that? Oh, Lancaster flying over. Neat. Awesome. Well, I was checking, is it 11:11 or something? Yeah. It's just a... Okay, the airplane is awesome. I love it. The passage is weird. Right? Like, you read it and you go, what's happening here? This is the people of God that we're talking about, and they've got an ephod and an idol and a shrine in their own house? Like, it's just... It doesn't make any sense. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. The author wants you to know that's the point. I'll tell you, I've got history with this passage. Have you ever heard this passage before? It's so obscure. Right? 2 or so years ago, when I was doing my graduate certificate in preaching, this is one of the passages that I was assigned to speak on in class. And it was obscure to me then, but it stuck with me. This passage is profound somehow. Paints a picture of what happens when people ignore God and do whatever they feel like. I thought about using that sermon from 2 years ago. I got an A on it. But I thought, it doesn't really work for here. So I wrote it, and then I rewrote it. And I think this is what I need to say to you this morning. It's sad when God's people trivialize him and treat him with less than the full devotion that he deserves. I think that's the point of Judges 17 and 18. It's sad when people trivialize God, treat him with less than the devotion that he deserves, and do whatever is right in their own eyes. I'd like you to turn to Judges 17, if you're not already there. Judges 17, I'll show you why I'm saying that. Now, as you're flipping through pages, I will say this. We've been in the last 3 weeks or so looking at Israel and the people of God and the situation from a macro perspective. We've been looking at things from the perspective of the people did evil in the sight of the Lord. They were unfaithful. Then God rejected them. Then God in his mercy rose up a deliverer. And that went on and on and on. Well, today we are going to zoom in on one particular household to see what it was that the people were doing in order to be unfaithful to the Lord. The verse 1 drops us right into the middle of drama. You've heard it from Ray already. Here it is again. Now, a man from Micah, from the hill country of Ephraim, said to his mother, the 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, and about which I heard you utter a curse, I have that silver with me. I took it. Then the mother said, the Lord bless you, my son. When he returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother, she said, I solemnly consecrate my silver to the Lord for my son to make a carved image and a cast idol. I will give it back to you. So he returned the silver to his mother, and she took 200 shekels of the silver and gave them to a silversmith who made them into an image and an idol. And they were put in Micah's house. Now, this man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and some idols and installed one of his sons as a priest. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Okay, let's talk about this. From a distance, this looks kind of like a moral religious family, right? They appear to worship Yahweh. They use their money to honor him. When they wrong one another, they forgive each other in the name of the Lord, and they confess their sin and forgive one another in Yahweh's name. Those are good things. But look a little bit closer, and you go, wow, this is just totally wrong. This is what faith would look like reflected in a funhouse mirror. You know those things that you look in and they make you look big or skinny or tall or fat or whatever? The contours of faith are here, but it's horribly corrupt and distorted. Here's a guy, Micah, who has stolen essentially his mother's life's savings from her. In verse 10 of that chapter, there's somebody who's going to take 10 shekels for a yearly wage. He takes 10 shekels for a yearly wage. Micah has stolen 1,100 from his mom. That's a lot of money. And by the way, that amount, 1,100, is the amount that Delilah was paid to deceive Samson. I don't think that this is Delilah, but I do think the narrator wants us to think about Delilah when we think about Micah's mom. There's something in her character that's dubious. Her motives are mixed. Micah does come clean. He admits that he takes the money, but why? Because he feels bad about it? Because he thinks that, or he realizes that theft is counter to the character and will of God? No. His mom cursed whoever took the money. He doesn't want to get cursed. And so he decides to come clean. The mother receives this news with grace, but then she decides to give a gift to the Lord in gratitude. How does she give a gift to the Lord in gratitude? By commissioning an idol. You'll notice that she says, I give my silver to the Lord. Then she gives one-fifth of her silver. But that in itself is not the issue. The bigger problem is that she's building Yahweh an idol. You can't do that. But what's the second commandment? Thou shalt have no graven image of anything in heaven or on earth. Now here is Micah's mom having an idol built in honor of Yahweh and putting it on Micah's fireplace. You don't do that. That's like wanting to honor Nelson Mandela and building a school for whites only in his name. It's offensive. It's wrong. And sadly, this is not the only sign of idolatry in Micah's house. Verse 5 says he's got a shrine, an ephod, like in Gideon, think idol. And he's made one of his sons a priest. I can't even begin to nail down all that's wrong with that. You shouldn't have a shrine in your house. You shouldn't have an ephod. You shouldn't have idols. You don't name your own son a priest. Like, no conflict of interest there. And besides, God had set apart the Levites, in particular, to represent the people to God and to teach them about who God was. Micah has just blown through all of that. You know what he's doing? He's doing religion right in his own eyes. He is relating to God on his own terms. Not God, you have the right to say what's right and wrong, but God, I shall tell you what is right and wrong. If I choose to honor you with an idol, I will honor you that way. If I choose to honor you by any other means than what you have set apart, I'll just do it my way. In the words of A.W. Tozer, he is simply imagining things about God and then acting as if they were true. He is shaping God rather than letting God shape him. And I mean, in this chapter at least, things seem to be looking pretty good for him. Look at verse 7. A young Levite from Bethlehem in Judah had been living within the clan of Judah, left that town in search of some other place to stay. On his way by, he came to Micah's house in the hill country of Ephraim. Micah said to him, "Where are you from?" The Levite said, "I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah," he said, "and I am looking for a place to stay." Then Micah said, a Levite, eh? I could use one of those. And so he says, "Why don't you live with me and be my father and my priest, and I'll give you 10 shekels of silver a year plus room and board." So the Levite agreed to live with him, and the young man was like one of his sons to him. And Micah installed the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in his house. And Micah said, "Now, I know that the Lord will prosper me because I have a Levite for a priest." Again, this is funhouse faith. It looks kind of like faith, but it's horribly distorted. First of all, this priest, he's wandering around. Okay, that's fine. But you know what he's doing? He's looking for opportunity. He's looking for a place where he can make money doing his job. Levites are set apart by God to live in certain cities, to minister there amongst other priests, and to be supported by the people where they are. Micah's house is not one of those places. Micah is looking for an opportunity. Not Micah, but the Levite is looking for an opportunity. Deuteronomy says you go to the Levite towns, and then you do your work there. And speaking of Deuteronomy, when the Levite sees Micah's idols, the very first thing that he should do as a faithful Israel is stone Micah to death for having those idols, and then destroy the idols. But instead he says, "Sure, I'll work for you for 10 shekels a year. I would be pleased to take room and board, and I'll be your priest." This is people doing right in their own eyes. And Micah's conclusion at the end, "Now I know that the Lord will be good to me because I've got this Levite." Is this how God works? You get your religious ducks in a row, and then God will have to bless you, and the better the ducks, the better the favor? God is looking for obedience and faith, not ritual and status. But Micah thinks he can manipulate God this way. Now from here, the narrator moves Micah to the back burner for a minute, so he can tell us about another group of people who are doing things that are right in their own eyes. Don't worry, we've not heard the last of Micah. In fact, the people that we are about to hear about in chapter 18 are on a collision course with Micah and his priest. So, chapter 18, verse 1, the narrator reminds us, "In those days, there was no king." The implication, and I would argue the larger point of the book of Judges, is that if there was a king, He would have put to rest all of this godless nonsense. Well, there's no king, and so in those days, the tribe of the Danites was seeking a place of their own where they might settle, because they had not yet come into an inheritance among the tribes of Israel. Now, that's a charitable way of putting it. The people of Dan had an inheritance. There was a parcel of land that was allotted to him, and I think I've got a map here coming up next. So you can see on the left-hand side there, Dan's allotted territory. That's their land. It's just beside and underneath of Ephraim. You can see the approximate location of Micah's house there, just to give you a sense of where they are. Now, this was Dan's land. This was the land that the people of Dan were to go in and take. But here's the thing. They got into the land, and the people there put up some resistance, and they said, you know what, this is too much work. We're going to find some other place to inherit. Instead of doubling down and saying, God, we trust in you, we rely on your strength, we are going to just find an easier place to live. Rather than pursue what God has given them, they choose to do right in their own eyes and look for somewhere else to live. So they send warriors out to find some place, and they stumbled upon Micah's house. They're going north at this point. Now, upon finding an altar and an idol in his house, again, what's the first thing they should do? They should stone him and then put to death whoever it is that made the idols and destroy the idols. But they weren't going to allow religious scruples to get in the way of their important mission here. So they got talking to the priest. Who brought you here? What are you doing here? Why are you here? The priest told them what Micah had done for him. And he said, he has hired me, and I am his priest. Now, there's no sense of God at work in this guy's life. There's no sense of God at work in this priest's life. And they said, please inquire of God to learn whether our journey will be successful. And the priest answered them, go in peace, your journey has the Lord's approval. Now, if you are using something other than the NIV translation, you will see that the priest's answer was not that certain. I think that the NIV translates it the way that the Danites heard. The Lord is watching over your journey, and he is in favor of it. But the priest literally says, the journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord. The Lord is watching you. They take that to mean, oh good, we're going to have success. But the ambiguity says, well, no, hold on. The land that you should be in is the land that you've just walked away from. But, you know, that land is just so much work. So they go off to find a place to live, and they come 200 kilometers or so north to a place called Laish, which was fertile and prosperous and occupied by a bunch of people who didn't look like much of a threat. So they made the almost 200-kilometer journey back home again and said, guys, there is this place to live which is unsuspecting. The land is very good. The land is spacious. Surely God has given us this land. Except that they should be taking the land where they are currently standing. By not taking it, they are turning their back on God's gifts. And I'll say this, the book of Judges and the book of Joshua often get a bad rap because there is a lot of killing in it. There's a lot of wiping out the inhabitants of the land. But the way that the narrator talks about Laish here is meant to make us sympathize with them. Right? Remember Cecil the lion that was shot by the American dentist? The Laishians are Cecil the lion. And the Danites are the big bad hunter that came in to get them. These people have a right to be there. This is their land. The Danites have no right to be there. The Danites are in the wrong trying to take their land. The Laishians are up there like the three little pigs. And then along comes the big glad wolf to take them out. So off 600 guys go with their families, and they are going to do battle. Along the way, they come to Micah's house. Then the five men who had spied out the land of Laish said to their brothers, do you not know that one of these houses has an ephod and other household gods and a carved image and an idol and there's a priest there? Now you know what to do, i.e., If we can get those things, surely God will be on our side. So they turned in and went to the house of the young Levite at Micah's place and said, "Hello!" The 600 Danites, armed for battle, stood at the entrance to the gate, not intimidating at all. When these men, verse 18, went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, and the other household gods and the cast idols, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" They answered him, "Be quiet, don't say a word. Better yet, why don't you come with us and be our father and our priest? Isn't it better for you to serve a tribe and a clan in Israel as priests rather than just the priest of one man's household?" And the priest was glad. Literally, his heart was glad. He was looking for opportunity. This guy's looking for upward mobility. Here it is. Sure, he'll betray Micah, but whatever. It's right in his eyes to get ahead in the world. So he took the ephod, the other household gods, and the carved image, and went along after the people, with the people. So off goes the priest with the Danites. Now, clearly, the Danites realized that Micah might not be very happy about this, so they put all the precious stuff up in front of them. They put all the warriors in the back. And when they had got some distance from Micah's house, the men who lived near to Micah were called out, and they chased after the Danites. As they shouted after them, the Danites turned and said to Micah, "What's the matter with you that you've called out? You're fighting men." Talk about nerve of these guys. Like, sure, we stole your ephod and we stole your priest, but what? What did we do to you? Micah replied, verse 24, "You took the gods I made," cringe, "and my priest, and you went away. What else do I have? How can you ask what's the matter with you?" At this point, every believing bone in your body should be screaming, "You should have had God all along. And he is all that you ever needed, but you chose instead to trust in a God that you made with your own hands. He couldn't even protect you, so of course, now you have nothing." The Danites answered, "Don't argue with us, or some hot-tempered men will come along and they'll get you, and your family will lose your lives." So the Danites went their way, and Micah, seeing they were too strong with him, tucked his tail and went home. That's the pathetic end of Micah. And then the Danites took what Micah had made and the priest, and they went on to Laish against a peaceful and unsuspecting people. And they huffed and they bluffed, and they attacked their city with a sword and burned it down. Then the Danites rebuilt the city, and they settled there. They named it Dan, after their forefather Dan. And there the Danites set up for themselves the idols, and Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Moses, and his sons were priests for the tribes of Dan until the time of the captivity of the land. The narrator has saved a real gut punch for the end. You know the Levite priest? You know the Levite priest who ignored God's prohibition against idols, who sold his services to the highest bidder, the one who agreed to lead the people of God in worship of idols that would take them away from God? That's a grandson of Moses. That's how far unfaithfulness runs in the people of Israel right now. The very family right now in the book of Judges, the very family that God set apart to represent the people to him and to teach the people about him are the ones who are leading them into idolatry. It's a tragic end to a tragic book. In verse 31, they continued to use the idols Micah had made all the time the house of God was in Shiloh. So all along, I had on the image there a place called Shiloh. I don't know if you noticed it. All along, there was a place where you should go to worship God. It was not at the Dinah's house. It wasn't at the Micah's house. It was at Shiloh. But instead, they set up this rival worship center in the north of Israel, and it was there for many, many generations. The idol that Micah made and the Danites stole would lead God's people away from him for many years until it was replaced by another idol, probably a worse one, a golden calf, by an illegitimate king. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, I've had about three different ideas of where to go from here in the message. And last night when I was playing air hockey with Ben and Anna, it just overcame me. Like, it's so sad. It's so sad when people honor God with less than the full devotion that he deserves and instead do what's right in their own eyes. Right? This passage is that writ large. These people pay lip service to God. They decide how they'll worship God. They decide if they want to give him any say in their lives. If they don't like God's will, then they just look for a better opportunity and do that instead. It's tragic, and for at least a couple of reasons. First, it's sad when people trivialize God because he deserves our total devotion. I mean, these people are as little as two generations away from the people that God brought out of slavery in Egypt. Right? The grandparents and great-grandparents of Dan and the Levite and Micah were witnesses to the great redeeming work of God at the Exodus. Micah and the Danites and the Levites are recipients of this freedom that God has given to them and their families. And yes, these people have turned their back on God time and time again, and yet God has raised up a deliverer for them time and time again to get them out of the trouble that their sin has caused. Micah and the people of Dan actually live in the neighborhood of Samson. I wouldn't be surprised if they had heard about this strong man who did things in the name of the Lord in order to free his people. And yet, rather than honor him with all of their hearts, they chose instead to relate to him as a, I don't know, heavenly vending machine and put their real trust in their own strength, in the things that they created. It's sad when people trivialize God because he deserves our full attention, our full devotion. And second, it's sad because the outcome falls way short of the good things that God has planned for his people. Right? Micah thought he had it all made with his idols and his own personal Levite, but how did that turn out? He lost it all. He went home with his tail between his legs and a handful of nothing. The priest, what about him? He thought he had it all together. He had a family job, and then he got a tribal job. But now how do we remember him? Oh, he's the apostate priest who messed everything up for Israel. The Danites, what about them? They got their land up in the north of Israel. They actually became a prominent rival worship center to the legitimate worship center. But all of that came crashing down at a time when verse 30 hints at. If you look at verse 30, it mentions the captivity of the land. In 722 BC, God had finally had enough of these people playing around with him. He brought in invaders to carry them out of the land because of this funhouse faith that they were exhibiting. You know who the first ones to be overrun were? Dan. Dan was carried away into exile, never to be heard of again. God had every intention of blessing these people in the land, and they threw it all away. They said, God, I know better than you how to prosper me, and I'm going to do it my way. And that fell way short of what God had for them. It is sad when people trivialize God because he deserves our total devotion, and because the outcome is far worse than what God himself would give. So here's the question. Are we honoring God to the degree that he deserves? Or are we doing right in our own eyes? You know, the doing right in our own eyes thing is very much the way of the world these days. You look at the newspaper headlines, and it's not hard to understand that. Tony Clement did what was right in his eyes. The shooters in every one of those shootings did what was right in their eyes. The world shows us that when we all do right in our own eyes, we experience less than the good life that God intends. There is no shortage of selfishness, of injustice, of broken relationships. But this is exactly the oppression of sin that Jesus came to deliver us from. God raised Jesus up as a final deliverer who would come in once and for all and scoop his people out of the mire of sin that comes from doing right in your own eyes, and instead allow them to live a vibrant and full and abundant life. Not because we deserved that, not because we were good enough, but because God is just that gracious. Jesus died to lift each of you out of the cycle of unfaithfulness and rejection and brokenness. So given that, when you hold a mirror in front of your heart, what do you see? Micah, the Levites, the Danites, a funhouse faith? A faith that says, I will decide what's right for me. I will relegate God to the back burner when other things come up. Isaiah and Jesus were right about these sorts of people when they said, they honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. God has been so abundantly gracious to each and every one of us. And he deserves our full devotion. He doesn't deserve a fifth of it. He deserves 100% of it. And the outcome of that devotion is nothing less than abundant life. So let Micah and his funhouse faith be a contrast to you. And let him inspire you to honor God with true devotion. Let's pray. Father, thank you for including Micah in your word. Because we do act like him sometimes. We act as if ritual is what you want. Or we act as if you don't really matter at all. But God, you have loved us with an intimate and personal and redeeming love that lifts us out of self-interest and brings us into a freedom of life that is beautiful. It's free. It's life-giving. I pray in light of your graciousness, God, that you would inspire us to be 100% faithful. I pray that you would keep us from treating you like Micah did, like something that can be manipulated or something that can be reshaped in our image. Help us to engage with you on your terms, Lord. Help us to love you with the fullness of our hearts, because you have loved us conclusively first. Lord, we pray for your help in living true faith. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Let's stand together as we respond.